everyone, and thanks for joining us today. We'll begin the webinar shortly. I just want to do a quick sound check first. So if you can hear me, do you mind typing in the chat box or raising your hand and letting us know that we're coming in loud and clear? All right, it sounds like we can all, you guys can all hear me, so we will just get started in just a few more minutes. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Once again, thank you for your patience as we allowed for a few more people to join the webinar today. As you are aware, you are currently in a webinar for the Outreach Lecturing Fund. So the PowerPoint goes forward. My name is Sarah Kauser. I am the Outreach and Recruitment Analyst who works on this program, and I am thankfully joined today by my colleague David Levin, who is the Senior Program Manager and Diversity Coordinator at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. David, would you like to say hi real quick?
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
Wonderful. So hopefully we did that check. You can hear us loud and clear coming through. As a quick note, I just want you to be able to see on your screen through the GoTo system that there is a question and answer box that you can type throughout. We will actually have a question and answer portion at the end of this webinar, but please feel free to send your questions throughout the webinar. We will try and get to all of them. And lastly, just as a note, this webinar is being recorded and will be placed on our website. So if you've registered, you'll also get an email from me once it's archived. It takes about 2 to 3 business days, but we will get that to you as soon as it is done. But thank you again for joining. So the Fulbright Scholar Program, which the Outreach Lecturing Fund falls within, was established in 1946 by a junior senator from Arkansas by the name of J. William Fulbright. And the goal was to promote mutual understandings between the people of the United States and people of other countries of the world. The Scholar Program is administered by the Institute of International Education on behalf of the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. We work in concert with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad to administer this program. As a quick note, as you can tell, last year we did celebrate our 70th year, and we're very excited for that achievement. And on this page, you can see two photos that really capture the history of the program. On the left is a photo from one of our first Fulbright scholars while on program in Burma, while on the right, you can see one of our more recent photos from a scholar who was part of the initial Fulbright Arctic Initiative that launched last year. So we're very excited to show this history of this program that spans so long. Moving forward, I'm actually going to pass the mic over to David, who will speak about the OLAF program objectives, as well as the benefits that you as a host institution can receive and the benefits that the scholars receive while on program. So David, I'm passing it to you.
Thanks very much. We appreciate, again, you tuning in, and we're maybe a little bit biased, but we're excited about this program because it does some things that really enhance the Fulbright program overall and is perhaps the easiest program for you to become engaged with. The idea is that we want U.S. universities and colleges to become more engaged with Fulbright, to take advantage of having scholars who are here on Fulbright to come to your campus to help you internationalize is maybe the best way to put it. Sort of a quick and dirty way of doing that, where scholars could come to your campus from 2 to 6 days to make short visits, to engage with your students, with your faculty, with your administrators, and even to engage with people outside of campus. Let's just give you a little bit of history. This program used to be called the Occasional Lecturer Fund, and it was really driven by the scholars who would contact CIS and would say, I'd like to visit a campus, and I've talked with the campus officials, and here's my plan, and so forth. We changed this 3 or 4 years ago to make it campus-driven rather than scholar-driven, because we really want this to be, in a sense, a program that best meets your needs. So the idea is that you'd be bringing Fulbrighters who are on campuses across the country, typically doing research, typically at Carnegie One institutions. And the idea is, and I'm skipping ahead, sort of melding together 3 slides. One talks about objectives, one talks about the benefits to you, and one talks about benefits to the visiting scholar. But the idea is we want these scholars to get a better sense of America, to perhaps visit another part of the country, different from where they're doing their work, to visit perhaps a different kind of institution, to broaden their perspective, which is really what we're trying to do while they're here in the United States, but at the same time helping you as a campus both benefit from them being on campus, lecturing to your students or your faculty or your staff and so forth, but also helping you get a better sense of what Fulbright's all about. We've typically geared this program so that we're giving preference to schools that are perhaps less engaged with Fulbright. So maybe that means you're a minority-serving institution or a small liberal arts college or a community college or institution serving artists, or you're a rural institution. Maybe you've had less experience with Fulbright. This is a nice way to start or to even to expand on what you're doing already. So you bring the scholar to campus, you determine what you'd like them to do in advance, you have a plan for them on campus and within the community, as I said, 2 to 6 days, and it, in a sense, opens up the world of Fulbright to you so that you could realize by having this Fulbrighter on your campus, hey, we could be sending our students or our scholars to this person's country on a Fulbright, or we could be engaging someone from this person's home country or another country on an inbound Fulbright, perhaps scholar in residence or a foreign language type program where someone comes to teaches a foreign language on your campus. It opens up the world of Fulbright to you that perhaps you're not as familiar with. So we clearly see that it benefits the scholars. We clearly see that it benefits your institution in terms of internationalization. We also think that it helps you in the long term in terms of getting more familiar with Fulbright, realizing that Fulbright is a comprehensive program. We do about 8,000 grants in a given year. We're looking for all kinds of institutions and all kinds of individuals. And diversity and inclusion is really important to us. We're really working to engage as many campuses as we can, as many scholars, as many participants, and realizing that we call the Fulbright program elite but not elitist. And we think that's really true. And we hope that you'll take advantage of that. So let me turn it back to Sarah to tell you how the OLF program works.
Great. Thanks so much, David. I think that's a wonderful, opening to this program and just highlighting the benefits that we have, that we're really seeking to send these scholars to these institutions. So as David mentioned, this program in the last few years has switch to being institutionally driven. So if you are a visiting scholar on the line, we welcome you for joining today. Just make a note, we're happy to share this information with you, but really you should be reaching out to these institutions and they should be the ones applying on your behalf. So what does the application process look like? So we do encourage U.S. institutions to apply to bring these scholars. In a few moments, I will take us to the website to show you where you can find a list of those visiting scholars at any given point. But throughout the year, we have about 850 to 900 Fulbright visiting scholars in the U.S. at any given point in time. We're here from all different types of countries, as well as their research and teaching focus span different disciplines. So usually there's a Fulbright scholar for any institution. What you're looking for, you just might have to be flexible in terms of the search criteria that you're looking for. We do encourage institutions, as David was saying, to partner with other local institutions to really expand the reach of the Fulbright Scholar Program through the Outreach Lecturing Fund. So, and as he mentioned, you can see there's a list of the institutions that we are considering priority institutions, which are those minority-serving institutions, community colleges, small liberal arts colleges, women art institutions, rural institutions. All of these institutions we're really seeking to expand to. One of the goals we would love to see is to have an OLF in every state. So we're really trying to do our part to really get these scholars on the road so they can see different areas of the United States as well as different institutional backgrounds. And the last note I would say before we move on from this page is these OLF are actually lectures. We're looking for these scholars to go to your campus to lecture to the classrooms, as David mentioned, to put on more large community lectures. What the OLF does not entail are for scholars to attend conferences and meetings. If that is something that you're looking for, reach out to me. Maybe we can find an alternative that we can merge that visit with another institution that is looking for a lecture. We'll try and work with you, but please note that the OLF is not to be used for conferences and meetings. It's strictly for lectures on your campus. In terms of eligibility requirements, the host institutions must be accredited U.S. college or universities. If you are from an organization that is outside of this scope, again, please reach out. We do a lot of work with K-12 schools as well as other nonprofit organizations, but they do typically partner with an institution as well. But again, reach out. We're in the business of trying to make it work and say yes, so we will work with you to craft an eligible application for this program. Additionally, all institutions must be at least 75 miles away from a scholar's U.S. host institution. Now, typically you'll have scholars going to different states. There are some exceptions for those rather large states such as California and Texas, where the scholar is actually going from Southern California to Northern California, and it's different enough that it actually meets this purpose, or there is some correlation that that's exactly the type of scholar that you are looking for. Just make sure that you are meeting that 75-mile criteria, and you should be good to go. In terms of the cost responsibility, we do have an expectation that the host institutions are covering lodging, local transportation, meals, and incidentals. You'll see there's an asterisk on this. We'll go into it on the next slide. But there is additional funding that could be available should you not have funding to provide this cost share element. In terms of the visiting scholar must be a current visiting Fulbright scholar. Oftentimes we have people reach out for students. This is only for the scholar side of the program, so please make sure that you are looking only at the scholar directory, which I will show you on the website momentarily. These scholars must also be on grants longer than 3 months. This is for administrative purposes that we need to be able to pay the scholars while they are here, and so any grant shorter than 3 months just really isn't eligible for that program. Lastly, these scholars need to either be in possession of or currently being applying for a U.S. Social Security number and a U.S. bank account. That, again, is an administrative requirement for us that we need to pay these scholars after the event, and in order to meet all of the criteria, we have to have these two documents. The last note I want to say is most of these grants actually take place between 2 to 6 days in duration. We've seen shorter, we've seen longer, but really 2 days is what you're hoping to hit, because the scholar needs to not only get to your location, but be able to benefit from being at your location and lecturing to your community. And lastly, as one more administrative detail, the scholars actually cannot lecture in the last month of their grant. If you have any issues with this, please reach out to me. We'll see what we can do, but typically they are not allowed to lecture for the reasons I stated previously, that we do need to pay them, and there's administrative processes. We need that last month to make sure that they are paid before they leave the country. So as I alluded to on the previous slide, this is a cost-sharing program. The funds that Fulbright does provide are for the airfare and transportation to and from the airport in their host city. We do ask that institutions look at ways to cost share part of these OLF experiences for the benefit on your campus, which is usually in the form of local transportation to and from the airport, lodging, or meals. Some institutions may not have that ability to provide those cost share elements. If that is the case, reach out to me. We do have additional funding on the side, and it's on a case-by-case basis, so it still is an application. You will not be guaranteed it, but we do look at institutions who might have financial limitations, and we do try and provide ways for them to still participate in this program. We don't want that cost to be what deters you from applying. So please just reach out if you have any questions about that. So in terms of the process, I love this graphic. It's easy as 1, 2, 3. In order to bring a Fulbright Visiting Scholar to your campus, first you have to start from the basis of identifying what scholar you would like. In the next moment or two, I will take you to the website to where you can find these scholars. But what you would do is you would look through the scholar directory, find a scholar that meets the needs of your campus, and you can either, for step two, you'd want to contact them once you've decided who you want. You can actually contact them through their faculty associate, or you can contact me, and I will email them on your behalf, providing your details. Unfortunately, we cannot give out scholar email addresses due to privacy concerns, but I've never had any issues with scholars getting back to the host as we do reach out to them. Once you have identified and agreed to terms with these scholars, you will start the application process. And we will also show you on the website where to find those details. So give me 1 second and we will get to the website. All right, so you should be able to see on your screen right now the homepage for the Fulbright Scholar Program. As I mentioned before, this program is only eligible for the scholars, not the student side of the Fulbright Program. On this homepage, you can actually find under Programs, if you go down to U.S. Institutions, there's a tab that references the Outreach Lecturing Fund. You can also type in cis.org/OLF, and that will also direct you to this page. So on this page, there's a general overview for the program. The eligibility that we spoke about is on the next tab. The application materials that I was referencing are on the third tab over. If you are applying towards the end of the summer, we'll start to have the next program materials coming up. So there's a drop-down for you to decipher which application materials you should need depending on the timeline of your host. So this is where you will download all the forms to submit to us through at olf@iie.org. In terms of locating a scholar, I want to direct you to back to the homepage. There's a tab titled View the Fulbright Scholar Directory. As it loads, it will come to a section where you can actually filter to find these scholars that would best suit your purpose. The one thing the two predominant filters I would say to use are to select non-U.S. visiting at the top, and within advanced filters, you can actually filter by the academic year. So if you're listening to this webinar now, you don't want a scholar from the past, so please make sure to hit 2017-2018. And if you hit search at that point, it will pull a very long list of scholars. As you can see, it's definitely more than 9 pages. There's over 800 scholars at any given point for each academic year. If you want to filter on top of this, you can also filter by discipline, or you can filter by program country. So if there is a certain area that you wish to work with, this is a better way to filter on top of that. So going in, let's filter by art history. Let's see what we can come up with. So for the 17-18 cohort, there are actually 2 scholars that meet those criteria. We'll just go into one to show you what you'd be seeing on each page. The first section is information about the scholar. So you can see where they're from, what their discipline and specialization are. To the right of that is information on where they are currently hosted in the U.S. So this scholar is at the University of New Mexico, and their faculty associate is also listed here. What you could do at this point is, if you knew Dr. Miller, you could reach out to him, or you could search for him through his website and reach out asking about putting you in touch with Evelyn to come to your campus. Or at this point, you could then turn and email me, and I will reach out to Evelyn on your behalf. If you want to make sure, and I definitely say you will want to make sure that the scholar is currently in country for the time that you wish to host them. This bottom section titled Grant Information is key for you as well. So you can see that the end date is June 2018. So keeping in mind that the scholar cannot lecture in the last month, you would not want to ask for the scholar to come past May. So just keep that as a note that you want to make sure you're putting in eligible requests and not requesting a scholar that has potentially already left the country by the time you wish for them to come. This last section is actually quite important. It's the project title. So say you weren't sure who you wanted to host in terms of discipline, but you had keywords that aren't actual disciplines. If you go back to that search criteria on the previous page, under advanced filters, there's an area for you to actually search by, let's cover it up one second. But within the project section, you can actually type in keywords. So one of the big things that we've had in the past are people searching for women's issues and women's rights. So if we type in, make sure I have the Zinc Scholar selected. Try that one more time. And just typing in that keyword, you'll get some more results that do center around that area of interest. So if you don't have a discipline that's specified in the drop-down list, I highly suggest you use that project title section to really search out more scholars that might meet your criteria. All right, and we will move back to the PowerPoint. So I've already gone over where you can find the application materials. If you have any questions, we can go back to that page in a little bit. But moving forward, you're probably wondering how to apply and how to move forward after you've identified these scholars. So there are three things that we do ask each institution to provide when they're submitting an application. The first is to produce a letter of invitation on US college or university letterhead. That letter of invitation basically designates who you are, who you're inviting, and logistics of the OLF that you wish to have on your campus. So you'll mention the scholar's name, the duration of the time you expect for them to be on their campus, on your campus, I should say, as well as any lecture titles that you wish for them to conduct on your campus. This letter, you will also, if you are requesting supplemental funding, you will make a note in this letter. Or if you are providing housing or local transportation, we ask that you also write that in this letter so the scholar is aware of what all you are providing in addition to the OLF funding. The last piece that I will go over is some institutions do choose to provide an honorarium. You will also include that on this letter. The next thing that you will submit to us is a completed OLF application form, which is found on our website, as well as the invitation flyer. The invitation flyer is a Word template that basically has you just provide a summary of the lecture title, the date, and where it's taking place on your campus. We then will take that and distribute it to other local institutions, just promoting your event so they can see what you are doing within the program and potentially pique their interest. Sometimes institutions will ask to also come to your campus to attend those public lectures, so it will ask for you to designate a contact person in case there is other interest in the neighboring towns. Once you have completed these items, you will submit them to us. We ask you to submit them at least 30 days in advance of the proposed OLF visit. If you wish to submit them earlier than that, we will not complain on our behalf. It gives you more time to prepare for your event. But we do ask, again, that they are not taking place in the scholar's last 30 days. Once the scholar receives these approval emails from CIS, it will be directed to you. The scholar will be copied. They can then purchase their ticket and start the planning process to come to your campus. We do ask, once you submit an application, that you allow at least 1 week for us to respond to your application. And if you are sending additional emails, do note that does slow the process time down. But if you are making changes, please just highlight in the email that we need to look at your most recent email for the final updates to your application material. I went over the invitation letter a bit earlier, but just to go over it one more time, the purpose of this invitation letter, which will be on your school's letterhead, is to really set forth what you are proposing this scholar do on your campus, what activities they will engage in, the dates, and any commitment that you are choosing to provide to them. I did mention if you are providing an honorarium, you do need to write this, but please note this is not a requirement of the program, and we then have to submit it to our counterparts at ECA to get approval. So please note that that process time could vary just depending on how much you are providing. Oftentimes I get asked, what is the average? I would say anywhere from 250 to 300 is usually the average that institutions will provide as an honorarium, but please note this is not a requirement of the program. Additionally, if you are partnering with another institution that we mentioned earlier, we do ask that you also write that in this invitation letter. That way we can see who all you are reaching out to. If it's K-12, we have that all nicely written up in this letter that we can then save to our documents before we process the application. After the visit is over, we do ask that the host institutions submit the following documents to us. There is an online evaluation form. It will be linked in your approval email as well. It is also on the website, but we do ask that every campus visited by an OLF scholar submit this. So if you are partnering with a K-12 institution, we ask that the host at the K-12 school also submit an evaluation so we can really see and determine the impact that the scholar had at each location. You don't have to submit one for every lecture that occurred at your institution, but just for each location. For the host, we also ask that you take the time to think about writing articles or stories and submitting pictures to us. We like to promote these events. Our audiences love to hear about these events. So if you have any of those materials, we ask that you share them with us because it helps us promote these opportunities to other campuses. I currently have an institution who has a student who attended a lecture writing a blog post. We really appreciate hearing those stories, and we love to share those stories. In terms of the scholars, they will want to be reimbursed for this award. So we do ask that the scholar submit their electronic fund transfer form, or EFT for short, and a copy of their voided check to the scholar portal. They can actually speak with their program advisors for more details on getting access to that portal, but they do need to submit those documents there. They also need to, as I mentioned, they have to have a Social Security number. They will need to speak with their program advisor on how to submit that document because we do need that documented as well. At this point, they cannot do it through the scholar portal, but just have them reach out to their program advisor for more details. We also welcome scholar stories and blog posts and photos from the scholar's perspective. So if you are a scholar on the line, we're happy for you to submit these documents as well. One thing I did want to note, because it is approaching quite quickly, is International Education Week. Last year, we've been doing a lot of effort to promote this opportunity, and it's a great opportunity, as Dana said, to internationalize your campus, and what a better time to do than International Education Week. It is November 13th to 17th, so technically you are within that last month, but if you already have an idea of who you wish to host on your campus, please reach out to me. We can see if we can make an exception, but we would love to have more involvement from the institution during this time frame. So there's potentially still time to apply, but reach out to me after this webinar and we can discuss it. I placed on the screen two examples that happened last year. One was Jefferson State Community College. They actually had a scholar who went to all four of their campuses during that week. There's a list of the different lectures that they conducted. So as you can see, these scholars can talk on a wide variety of lectures and topics, both culturally and research-based lectures. The other institution that I mentioned who specifically had a scholar during IEW last year actually shared one with a local high school, actually two local high schools, I should say, and I heard nothing but great things about that lecture as well. And the different lecture topics are also posted there. But both of these institutions have been doing a lot of work to really promote international education at this time, and I always look forward to working with institutions to really suit the needs of their campus. On this page, again, you can see past examples of OLF. Some of my favorites are actually written on this page. We had one scholar who went to Oklahoma and actually lectured on Downton Abbey during the last season of that show. They did a few lectures across Oklahoma institutions talking about Downton Abbey, but she also had a few more cultural-based lectures while she was there. She really tailored them for what met the needs of the different institutions and also had a lecture at a local cinema for local residents in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So these scholars are amazing. I had the privilege to go and see that one in action, and it's just a really great opportunity to see these scholars lecture on campuses and at organizations. So as you can see, we've been mentioning that, yes, the scholars can come for the research, but do take a look and work with them because they have such a wealth of knowledge that they can provide additional lectures while on campus. So please utilize these scholars as best possible. So with that, that is really the overview of the Outreach Lecturing Fund. We can go straight into the Q&A. We do hope to get to all of your questions today, but if we don't, please email me at olf@iie.org. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, but with that, we will head straight into the questions. So the first question is, does the 2 to 6 days include travel days, or is that just the time for the scheduled visit on campus? Ideally, it also includes the travel days. However, we have not said no. Just note that these scholars really should be on your campus. Between those time frames, longer is acceptable, but these scholars also have commitments at their host institutions, so just be aware of that. As a former Fulbright Distinguished Chair in the UK and Australia, I can attest that the importance of this initiative. My host institution would have conformed to, conformed to the criteria of this initiative. However, they were less than supportive. I'm sorry to hear that, but if you have any questions about connecting on a deeper level, we'd be happy to give you ideas to get your institution to engage with the program. So please reach out to me and we can brainstorm some ideas. We have someone else who's curious about the language and is assuming English is the primary language of engagement. David might be able to speak to this a bit more, but yes, all of these scholars do have English language abilities. The scholar residence program that David mentioned is specifically for lecture-based scholars, so we often encourage institutions to reach out to the FIR scholars if they have any questions about that, but we've not had any problems with scholars in our past in their language abilities. David, do you have any other thoughts on that?
Sure. So typically, I think the scholars, even if they're here doing their research, typically have strong English language skills. You can sort of gauge that a little bit. If someone's coming here doing research in the hard sciences, it might be that their language skills might not be necessarily quite as strong as someone who's here in, let's say humanities or social sciences. Also, if that's a concern that you've got, certainly look at the countries from which scholars would be coming from, would give you some indication about, what someone's English language skills would be. But I think generally we have not had a problem because typically when the scholars are here, and they're here for, from 3 months to an academic year, they've needed to function within the U.S. society. So even beyond their own research or their own Fulbright activities, you know, their English language skills have needed to be sufficient so that they could, you know, basically, you know, engage in everyday living in the United States. But I think Sarah is right. The Fulbright Scholar and Residence Program, which brings, you know, 35 or 40 scholars specifically to the U.S. to lecture, virtually guarantees that you've got someone who not only has perhaps the strongest English language skills, but also is very familiar with lecturing because that's their actual role on a college campus.
Great. Thanks so much, David. So we have a few questions that are just inquiring about the end date for the scholars. As I mentioned, you can do look at the scholar directory to see that end date and make sure that the scholars don't fall within that realm. I can't drive home that the importance of that enough, so please take a look at the directory. But if you have any questions, please reach out. We can do some digging on our end to give you more of an exact date of when they are leaving the country. We have one question that's in regards to traveling by car to the OLF host. That is eligible. We don't book any travel. I want to make that note. We actually will pull the award based on a travel flight itinerary. However, the scholars do not have to purchase that itinerary. Once they receive the amount of the award, they will actually go and purchase whichever flight and time best suits their schedule and their host schedule. So while if you do wish to travel by car, we still have to pull that itinerary based on a flight, but really that is at the discretion of the scholar and the host if that is a feasible option. Additionally, they're asking if any receipts are needed. No, this is an award. It is already calculated. Scholars do not need to submit any receipts, so please be aware of that. So on the website right now, I have common questions and FAQs. If you have any questions, please check out this website. It can help you directly, and if not, you can still reach out to us. We'd be more than happy to answer any questions. Currently, if you still have questions, please type them in. We're happy to answer them while you're still on the line. But David, do you have any other thoughts while we are waiting for any questions?
Just a couple of things. I hope that those of you that have tuned in are enthused by what you've heard. Sarah describing sort of how this works and the advantages of participating. We also hope that you get a sense it's really a flexible program. There's no deadline date aside from the fact that a scholar cannot take the grant, within 30 days of their departure time. Other than that, there's no deadline date. Also, you should get a sense that with 900 scholars to choose from, we talk about them covering fields from anthropology to zoology and everything in between. And I think that's really true. Any topic under the sun you could think of, there's likely going to be a Fulbrighter who is working on that topic. Also, think creatively about how to use the scholar. The more they can do in terms of your community during their visit, the better. Are there ways that you can partner, as Sarah discussed, with local K-12 schools? Are there ways you can partner with community organizations, with other institutions? Take advantage of that scholar's expertise, not only in terms of whatever the research might be, but also them talking more generally about their country and their culture. Maybe that's more appropriate for a K-12 visit, for example. So think creatively about, how to use those scholars. Use them maybe is not the correct word, but really take advantage of their skills, their interests, their expertise. They benefit as much as you do because they're experiencing other aspects of American society and culture by virtue of their work on an OLF, on your campus, in the community. So they're benefiting from as much as you have. So to the extent that you can make their experiences, broader, more comprehensive, that's great. It benefits them, benefits you, and makes the program succeed even more than it would otherwise. So we hope that you get a sense that this is flexible. It's your program to you know, to work with. And as you host these scholars, think about ways that you as an institution might be more engaged with Fulbright. Part of the whole notion of this is to bring you more in contact with the world of Fulbright, to get you more engaged with what's available. And, you know, whether it's you as an institution, whether it's your students, whether it's your faculty, how can this help open the door to more Fulbright opportunities for you, or broaden that engagement that may be already ongoing, but you'd like to do more of it? So, again, thanks for tuning in, and we hope this is encouraging to you and exciting to you.
Great. Thanks so much, David. We did have a quick question regarding the number of times that institutions can host. I just want to highlight that we do have a limitation, ideally, that it's 2 per semester. That being said, if you are partnering with other institutions, which we highly recommend, you can share those scholars and potentially benefit from more within a semester. So you're not limited to just one. And on the opposite side, scholars are not limited to just participating in one. So if we have different institutions across the U.S. that are reaching out to the same scholar, if that scholar's time allows, that scholar can actually participate on more than one OLF. So they are not limited. But we do give priority to first-time hosts as well as first-time scholars. So please make note of that. Another question is, how does one institution decide between, if they're looking up a different discipline, between one scholar? Definitely take a look at their project title and ask us to reach out to maybe one or two at a time that you can actually speak with them over the phone, set aside some time to actually speak with these scholars to really see what their research focus is, what all they can to lecture on your campus about. So as David was mentioning, they have a wealth of knowledge, but maybe one scholar does align a bit closer to your campus's interest, your interest, and your classroom's interest. So we're happy to put you in touch with those scholars for you to have that one-on-one conversation to see if they actually meet the needs of your campus. We have a few scholars on the line. Again, thank you for joining today. The scholars are actually interested if they're allowed to actually speak with institutions about being invited to campuses. Yes, scholars are more than welcome to reach out to institutions. We do ask, this is still institutionally driven, however, scholars are welcome to reach out to put an expression out there that they are interested in coming to campuses. One way that you can go about doing that is through your faculty associate on your campus. Perhaps they have a colleague at another institution that would be interested in hosting you, or perhaps you met a Fulbright alumni that was in your country and you would like to visit their campus. We've seen that quite a few times, that upon returning, U.S. alumni of the program will actually invite scholars from their country where they were abroad and doing research. It's actually quite wonderful for them to bring back and build upon their experience. So there's a few different ways that you can go about that. The last thing that I want to show you is actually on the website. Let's go back to this. On the website, the last resource that I didn't mention before is on the homepage. It's titled the Priority Institution List. It's a pretty robust and comprehensive list. However, it's not exhaustive. It will take a few moments to download. I can attempt to get it to download today. Like I said, it's a large Excel list. This is of benefit to scholars to take a look at, but it's also a benefit of host institutions that might not meet the eligibility requirements set forth by OLF to give them an idea of other institutions they could partner with in order to have a successful application. So with this document, you can filter it as well. We really do love to filter these documents. You can filter by state, by city as well. And if you're a scholar who's interested in going to, say, Alaska, you can take a look at the different institutions in Alaska, as well as contact details to reach out to. One thing to note is if the institution does have a Fulbright Scholar Liaison, you can actually click on this link to get their contact details. These are people who have specifically set aside knowledge and time to really internationalize their campus and work with the Fulbright Scholar Program. So they have most of the knowledge about the program and can speak in depth about the ability of their campus to host. So I would encourage people to reach out to institutions that do have these liaisons. And as a plug on the institutional side, if you do look at this document or on our website and see that you don't have a liaison, which is located under On Campus and the Scholar Liaison Network, and you wish to have someone designated to serve in this capacity, you can email us at outreach@iie.org to really engage with the program on a higher level. So if you do see, you can type in institutional names, hit search to find out if you do have a liaison. It will look similar to this. Your name will be listed as well as your contact details, but you're opening the door to be emailed by visiting scholars and by the program and being kept informed of changes to the program. But if you have any questions about that, please email us for more details. But as an institution, if you're finding that you're getting more and more involved, we ask that you take a look at that opportunity. As of right now, I believe that's all the questions that we have coming through. Again, we're really happy to have you on this webinar. This webinar is being recorded. It will be archived in 2 to 3 business days, and you will also get an email as soon as that is archived and sent forth. But again, I know Dave and I are very grateful to have you on this call. We hope you will get in those applications to host visiting scholars either this fall or early spring. On the screen, you can see different ways to get involved. I did mention the Fulbright Liaison Network, Scholar Liaison Network, but other things that you can host are Fulbright U.S. Alumni Ambassador. So there's just different methods to get involved with the program. OLF is by far one of my favorites, I think one of David's as well. So we want you to apply for this program, but there's just different ways to get involved, and we ask that you continue to stay involved with this. But thank you again for joining, and I'll let David close it out as well.
Now, I'd like to add my thanks to you and hope you take advantage of this, good opportunities, short-term, long-term, exciting possibilities, and a whole variety of things. So thank you for tuning in.
All right. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.